Welcome to the PA Podcast. I'm Tag, and joining me today is our guest host, Mark Bonto, comedian and actor. We talk with one of our favorite comedians, Steve Middleman. He decided to leave it mostly raw as recorded. I think you'll like it.
Hey, Pa.
Hey, son. How you doing?
Good. I'll be right with you. I'm just going to turn the sound off over there in the other room.
All right, okay? Buddy. That'll work. He sees PA Podcast, called it Pa. That's funny.
Well, that's why he's saying that.
Yeah. It hit me. I went, oh, yeah, Pa, PA Podcast.
Wasn't getting that.
Pa. That's why I said, yeah, hey, son.
Hey, Pa. Hey, Pa.
I would have said,
your Pa.
Son, is that you?
Yeah, Pa.
This is called Pennsylvania. I mean, I see PA.
How's the Ponderosa? Yeah, they must be really happy in Pennsylvania today.
I'm actually not in Pennsylvania, but anyhow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm in Orlando, Florida, dude.
Nice.
Yes. Well, nice.
I'm going to be there September 8th.
September?
September 7th and 8th.
Where at?
Well, it's like a private, it's not a private party, but it's somebody, a doctor that I did a gig for. He does, believe it or not, he's a fertility doctor, and he does like Sinatra, like standards songs, and he's very good. It was his 50th birthday. It was like a corporate gig at the Ritz-Carlton.
Wow.
And then he said, hey, I want to do a club here. Maybe we can do it together. And so there it is.
Wow.
There it goes.
Isn't that great? So, who's on the line?
I'm also on the line, Steve. This is Mark Bonto. How are you?
Get the hell out! Finally, oh my God, I wasn't sure. It was only rumored in the press.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they dragged me into all this stuff, but that's okay. I said I know Steve, and he might need some help.
Oh, good. Thank you. That sort of makes sense. But you're in Detroit, though, right?
You're really close to Detroit, correct.
Yeah.
And when are you coming to Detroit?
I don't know. That's the thing. That's, I don't know. I'd like to.
Fertility doctors up here.
There's what?
We have a lot of fertility doctors up here.
Well, you know, the last time I was in Detroit, I did a country club, and it was the night that Ron Artest ran into the, That was when I was, I don't know, it's probably 8 years ago or something.
Yeah, he ran into the stands at the Palace. You were here then, huh?
I was here that night. I was watching the chaos. I was like, major, yeah. That was a Friday or a Saturday, but it was a country club gig, so. But
you see, every time you come to town, fights break out.
I love finish the joke.
Oh, thanks. You do great at it, so don't stop.
Okay, thank you. You know, My only issue with it, not that it's an issue, is that I just lose so much time on Facebook and online. I just play around, and then I don't get stuff, you know, done.
Yeah.
That's all. It's nothing against doing it. I love it. It's a tremendous writing exercise, you know.
Sure. Well, as Elaine Boozler says, I mean, Facebook is a clock sucker. I mean, it just sucks. It's a clock sucker. So,
I know, but I do love it. I truly love it. So,
well, thanks.
Yeah, that's how we met. So,
that's
yeah,
right.
Well, that's good. That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Oh man, Joe Pa, what a terrible. Oh God.
Oh my God.
So I'm so sick of the whole. I'm a big sports fan. I'm just so tired of this and.
Yeah.
You know, and Howard, Dwight Howard, speaking of Orlando, you know, I'm a big Laker fan. So just, it's endless. It's national news, it's local news, you know, just
right.
Endless. But, oh, what, you know, listen, we're doing better than they were doing in Aurora, you know, Colorado.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, I have perspective. I do have perspective on things. Yeah, anyway.
Hey, but, Steve, you sound a little echoey. Is that, are you in a...
No, that's how I sound normally. But
I know you're a big guy, so am I.
Yeah. Well, I just made it louder. Is it better?
Go ahead, say something.
Now, so I just made it louder. Is it better?
You fell for that one, Pa. Yeah.
I fell for that one, but I'm pumped.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, hook, line, and sing.
It's a better echoey sound. No, it sounds fine. It sounds clear to hear. To me.
Yeah, it's okay. It just okay. It just sounded like you were in a big room.
Well, if you want me to move back,
he's got a big house, Pa. Leave him alone.
If you don't want me to talk, it's okay.
I want you to sound good, man.
No, I'm joking.
I'm here
that's
for you.
Why we're here.
I'm here for you, Steve.
His phone's in the living room and he's in the bathroom, Pa.
Yeah. I know.
I'm here for you, buddy. I'm here for you.
I absolutely love my background in school was radio, you know.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you got started, and you were born in Montreal, and you hitchhiked to New York as a baby.
Well, yeah, I hitched to, very good. Are we taping this, or just to
Yeah, we're taping it, yeah.
Oh, we're taping. Oh, then I can't talk. Okay. my parents moved when I was a year old, and been, you know, in New York till I was about 30, then moved to L.A., and that's it. Thanks. Good night.
Right.
That was it. That's your whole story.
Ah, thanks so much for
between,
your
right?
Yeah, nothing happened in between. But, you wanted to talk about the early years in comedy. Is that...
What made you want to be a comedian and get you into comedy? Where did you start?
I had to survive my family, so I needed a sense of humor. My father was a big... You know, he was like Mo without the funny, you know? And, you know, I needed to... Actually, he was very funny. He'd kind of like scream, and then he'd say something funny, and you'd laugh, which make him scream more. So he didn't quite know when he was being funny, but he was a funny guy. And I guess some of it's in the genes. And I think I was like, you know, the sensitive kid. I was kind of miserable. You know, it was a tough childhood, and yeah, I think it was a survival thing for me, that and kind of this natural genealogy or something to be funny. You know, just that was it. And I loved radio, and I tried radio in school, and then they said, hey, you know, the money in radio is in sales. So I said, that's not for me. And then I got into comedy, which was sort of like my second love became my first love.
Wow. So yeah, started in radio. What stations were you on?
No, just college major.
College. Okay.
Yeah. No, I had a show. I had my own show, and that was fun. But it was not. I didn't want to do 6 months in Sheboygan and 5 months in Toledo. You know. And
why not?
I know. Well, really, that's like the Howard Stern movie. He did all that stuff.
Oh, geez.
So how did the radio turn into comedy?
What made me go into comedy?
Yeah, how did you went from the radio to comedy? Well, what was your first comedy gig? How did it turn into it? What happened?
There was a Ratzkeller in school. This is at Brockport, State University of New York at Brockport, which is like near Buffalo and Rochester. Anyway, so there was this Ratzkeller. There was another comic there. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but his name's Harris Pete. And he and I, we grew up, we went to the same high school, we grew up near each other, same college, and we both did comedy in the Ratzkeller, and that was how we got, my first time ever performing was an open assignment, do whatever I want in speech class, oral interpretation. So I said, I'll do stand-up, and they said, okay, and I did. I was up all night writing, running it by my roommates, and I did 5 minutes, and I like killed. So that was the class, but they already knew me and liked me, you know. So it was. I had a leg up on But then the Ratzkeller, I bombed for 4 minutes, and I killed the last minute, and it's very addictive,
Yeah.
Right.
So I still have no fallback plan. You know, you know, in school, it's like, well, once I decided I wasn't going to do radio and I loved comedy, there's nothing, what else am I trained for, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I'm a good writer, but I didn't pursue that as a career. And, you know, it's just comedy is it. I like doing it. I love doing it. And I guess, you know, 35 years later, here we are.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've been at it 35 years.
Yep. I started, well, now going on 37 in December.
Wow.
Yeah. So crazy.
Yeah, it is.
But and I started, I auditioned in the summer of 76 at the Improv in New York on 44th and 9th, and I passed after a few weeks, and then I did the comic strip and Catch. You know, I was like a regular at all three clubs, and I went back to school, and then I decided in the middle of the fall term that I wanted to just do comedy, and I was going to leave school. And then, but my father had a stroke, and if I had 12 credits, I would get like kind of, I called it my comedy grant, because I'd get a monthly fee from Social Security, because I was my father's dependent. And even though it didn't really help me out with school, the government didn't know that. So I had to have 12 credits. They let me do, believe it or not, 12 credits. And it was my comedy writing and my whole comedy experience. And I had to mail in my material to a professor and get graded, believe it or not. It's like crazy. But I got like $150. And how much did I need to sustain myself? Back then, I slept on my sister's couch. She moved into her boyfriend, who became her husband's place. And I took over her place for a few months. Then I got a studio apartment, and believe it or not, had roommates in a studio apartment. You know, I did whatever I could to get by. And, you know, it was very fortunate. It was around the corner from Catch, three blocks from the comic strip. And, you know, between buses and cabs and, you know, cab fare at the clubs, and they feed me, you know. So, I mean, I scraped and I got by. Those formative years were, you know, wonderful, because I just scraped by. And then I got some writing gigs. My friend Billy Rebeck and I, we wrote a comedy album for David Fry, the Impressionist.
Oh, yeah. I remember him.
Yeah, he had a real bad drinking problem. He couldn't get it sold, but we worked for him for a number of months. We wrote an album, and, you know, that was money. And then believe it or not, and his, at the height of his career, we wrote for Gabe Kaplan. We went to Vegas and worked for him for a couple of weeks. So we, you know, we got to make some money in show business, like, our right off the get-go.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, you know, it was like classic. It was like I got a phone call from Gabe Kaplan. You know, he was like the star of Welcome Back, Kotter. You know, he
exactly.
And Vinnie Barbarino.
Uh-huh. I grew up with that. Yeah,
yeah. And, you know, I said, come get out of here. This is not Gabe Kaplan. Rick Newman from Catch a Rising Star recommended me, and that was how it happened. Yeah, you know.
Wow.
Pretty weird.
Man, it's strange how life just has this twist and turns, yeah.
Well, then, now, they didn't see me as a stand-up. They saw me as a really good writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when I got back after all this writing, my friend Billy stayed in L.A., and I moved back to New York after a few months. And, you know, I got an offer to join Second City in Chicago. A guy, you know, this director from there loved me, and... I said, no, I want to just do stand-up. I mean, I love stand-up. But then I went back to Catch a Rising Star, and I could not get on stage. Either they, you know, whatever. It was like kind of based on the MC at the time. And if they didn't love you or, you know, whatever, you didn't give them drugs, then they wouldn't put you on stage. Anyway, it kind of, I didn't have a breakdown, but I'd have these... anxiety attacks, because, mm-hmm. you know, my whole life was comedy. I had no social life. I lived around the corner from the club. I literally hardly left the block except to go do the other clubs. I ate my meals on the block. I ate, like I said, at the clubs, you know, the bartenders liked me whether I was on or not. You'd have to get like a slip where, you know, they give you a meal and, you know, it was like, but when I didn't get on stage, it kind of like, I'd get these anxiety attacks because it would be like, I'd wait all night. I'd watch all the other acts and you learn by watching people too, but you need to get the stage time in. And just finally that kind of like knocked me into therapy, which was, I guess, a real good thing anyway. But I go, when your life is so about one thing, you need balance. So anyway, that's that.
Exactly. That's very true.
Yeah. So that's kind of early bird stuff, you know, my early days, but I did a lot of, you know, I got on, you know, a few, eventually I kind of got better and better, obviously. And I got on a few times a night, or at least a couple times a night, and then 4 or 5 times on the weekends. And then you start doing your first gigs.
Man.
There were the Jersey gigs. Whoever had a car or the guys that booked the shows in Jersey, Jerry Stanley and Jim Balazzos, they pick you up at the Improv, which was right next to the Lincoln Tunnel. So you do Jersey gigs, they were called. And, you know, from there you kind of develop a little reputation. And, you know, then I won the Laugh Off on Showtime, which really launched me. That was 1980. So,
exactly.
I mean, I went from really, you know, I didn't even know what I was doing, if I was headlining or what back then, but I don't remember. But I went from really hardly ever working to now headlining once I won that Laugh Off on Showtime. So that was pretty weird.
Fantastic.
There's a lot of pressure actually going from really doing, you know, okay, do 15 minutes to, well, now you got to do 45. So.
Hello.
Yeah, it's a big shock. Isn't that a shock to the system? Big
yeah.
shock.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Hey, what were some of your favorite comedy venues that you've played in?
Well, the Improv was amazing, except for the location. I mean, the brick, famous brick wall, you know,
right.
It was the original place, Bud Friedman,
yeah.
Who, you know, I think he gets a lot of credit for, like, launching people. The only thing is, the only credit, really, is for having a brick wall. I don't think, you know, I think there was so much talent out there. How could you not launch people?
Yeah. I kind of thought that too.
Yeah.
You know,
so,
it's great he was there, but he was there at the right moment. Yeah.
He stepped in gold, you know, he stepped in brick. he was, you know, that was an unbelievable place. I remember doing the comics, you know, Catch was amazing too, but I remember doing the Improv, and it was, you know, an old kind of beat up place. I remember emceeing there once and it was raining and there were like buckets and water dripping, you know, into buckets during the show. Imagine like constant water coming down.
Oh my God.
I remember doing the show once and they had a cat there and maybe they had like a mice or a rat problem and the cat kind of either got some like sticky mouse, you know, kind of paper or a mouse trap on its tail. And like, just like in the middle of the show, you got a cat running around screaming. And like, you can't believe some of it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild. I remember, I think like the fourth time I ever went on stage, other than that rat skeller, Diana Ross was, just happened to come in on a Sunday night to the Improv.
Really?
It was crazy. And talking about, you know, aside from being in, you know, the Supremes time, you know, that was, you know, 10 years later and, you know, like you couldn't get more famous. And it was a wild place, you know, it was just, but, you know, Times Square was pretty nasty back then. You know, it was a lot of drugs, a lot of violence, you know, it was not the best place to hang out all the time, but.
Yeah. I kind of miss those days. No.
Yeah, well,
no.
I wish, you know, it was a classic. I wish I knew then what I know now kind of stuff.
But, yeah, exactly.
But I changed dramatically. I kind of outgrew the character. I became, I went from, you know, just talk, you know, when you just start, usually you don't know who your character is on stage. You just try to say whatever you can to get as big a laugh as you can.
Right.
And then everything gets prioritized. What's your A bit? What's your B bit? Hopefully you don't have any C bits that you have to do, you know? And so, you know, one day my friend Mark Schiff, who'd probably be good on this too, I'm sure, he just said, you got to start talking about yourself. Just, you know, as I talk about everything else, whatever. And I had all this stuff written, but I never did it on stage. You know, I had all these jokes about having a weak chin, and, you know, it was like self-deprecating, but really funny. And that kind of launched me at another level. And then one day, another friend of ours, Tom Stern, he said, well, kind of like you're playing this loser kind of character, but play a loser who acts like a winner. And it was great directorial notes.
There you go.
Then, you know, it was like, instead of saying, I know what you're thinking, why did this guy go into comedy? And I was a real character, you know, the look.
Mm-hmm.
I go, hey, I know what you're thinking. Why did this guy go into comedy?
Yeah.
So, you know, that little tweak was an amazing adjustment. So then that sprung me to another level. And but, you know, again, you know, I evolved. I don't look like who I was back then. So I keep having to go through these changes, which is okay. It's fine.
So you got to base your material, I mean, based on, like, what's going on at the time. I mean, your physical appearance and what's going on in your life at the time.
Yeah.
A lot of your material stems from that.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's so I've had to go through this evolution, and, you know, I mean, I'm like Mr. Corporate Comedian, basically. I do mainly corporate events, but you know, I still enjoy it. I went through a comedy midlife crisis. What would I do? Like I said before, I'm not really trained for anything else. And I just kind of settled in to say, this is what I love to do. I might as well just, you know, continue doing what I love to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's it. It's kind of interesting, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Very. Hey, you've been on Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, and Letterman.
Yeah.
Surely you got some good stories to tell us.
Well, I'll tell you, in the early days, everybody's dream was to get on the Tonight Show. That was the ultimate,
exactly,
you know, pedestal, mm-hmm, you know, the top of the mountain. So when I got good enough to, I think it was after I won the Laugh Off, you know, I auditioned for the Tonight Show. And see, when you'd audition, when you'd go out and do the clubs and you'd kill, and most of the time I would kill an audience, and people would say, honestly, just simply, they go, hey, did you do Johnny? Which meant, were you on the Tonight Show? Did you do Johnny? All the time you get that. Did you do Johnny? And I go, no, not yet, not yet. And they'd always go, you are Johnny's kind of comedian. You are Johnny's kind of comedian. And then, you know, you do another set in another club. But, you know, it happened all the time. Did you do Johnny? You are Johnny's kind of comedian. And then I started auditioning for the Tonight Show. And Jim McCauley was the booker. And he was kind of a famous guy among all the comics. You know, and I usually would have a great set. And he'd go, I don't think you're Johnny's kind of comedian. I don't think you're Johnny's kind of... But I go, yeah, but everybody's telling me I'm Johnny's kind of comedian. I know I'm Johnny's kind of comedian. I don't think you're Johnny's kind of comedian. So finally, I, you know, would go on the road again, and people would say, you're Johnny's kind of comedian. And finally, after probably, I don't know, 8 times, he finally said, okay, you got the show. And I, you know, I was very excited. And, you know, a few weeks later, you get on the show, and I did my weak chin material, among other things, and I just destroyed. And he goes, you got to meet Johnny. You got to meet Johnny. So I meet Johnny after the show, and I'm like his proud, you know, protege or whatever, you know, McCauley. And he goes, Johnny Carson, Steve Middleman, and
Wow.
Shake hands, and Johnny looks me in the eye and he goes, "You are my kind of comedian."
Ah.
Wow.
Sweet.
It's a nice payoff after all that, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was the goal, and then, you know, I did Letterman and I did Leno, and Leno is almost every comic hates Leno, sadly, because he doesn't put enough comics on, and he's not supportive of where he came from, you know, which is too bad. And I think Letterman is much more supportive, at least of his old friends. He has people on, and
right, yeah,
you know, I mean, it's interesting. It's very different. And used to be that stand-up, you could get launched on TV. You can't think of one person Leno has launched.
No.
Right.
No, it's too bad. I mean,
that was his roots. It's like, up with that? Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah.
So how's comedy going for you guys? I'm turning the tables here.
Oh. Well, this is my comedy right here.
Yeah, this is
I am not a professional comedian, but I love to talk to comedians. But Mark Fonto might have something to say.
Well, I've done stand-up, professional stand-up, almost as long as you, Steve. I've been doing it since 1978, but I was much younger at the time. And I still do gigs quite a bit. I have my own comedy room up in this area, which is all about me, but it's not a big deal. But no, I've been keeping busy doing my stuff. But you're right, what you said about the early days, because I started in 1978, and those early days were a whole lot different, and it was magical back then. It was, you know, you brought me back to those days in comedy. And we talked to Tom Gleason just the other day, and when he talked about the earlier days, it brought me back to those days. I mean, those were the good old days, and as you know more than anyone, Steve, it's just a great time, and it was like what you said, what you know now, if you could apply it back then, you know, it was tremendous.
Very much. I think I'd have a very different career, and it's fine. I still enjoy it, but I was much more of an individual back then, which was great. Hey, listen, I'm glad you're still, you know, doing your thing. I hope to see you live one day, you know?
Yeah. It'd be great to meet you and maybe work together and talk. Like I said, it's been a crazy ride, and, you know, it's met a lot of nice people and a lot of good comedians along the way. Good people.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'll name drop and tell you that I had lunch, not just he and I. I mean, he and I have had meals together before, but I spent 3 hours with Richard Lewis on Saturday, which,
cool.
Yeah, he's like my favorite. Other than Jack Benny, I told him this. I said, "You and Benny, those are my two favorite comedians of all time."
Oh,
I love Richard Lewis.
Oh, my God. He's just purely...
How did the lunch go? Was he able to sit still? How did it go?
Well, he actually, he's got a lot of energy, put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, but he's really, we had a lot of laughs, and he's a good audience too. I mean, he'll listen and laugh, you know, it's like there's good give and take. It's not just all me kind of thing, you know, and he's very nice. And yeah, I just recently hung out with a couple of times with, Stephen Wright, he's a wonderful guy.
Love Stephen, yeah.
Yeah, and I just saw both of them in the last few months. I saw Richard do about 90 minutes at a club here. He hadn't been performing in L.A. in like 30 years or whatever, and then he did some kind of theater, and I got tickets last second, which is really nice. And then I saw Stephen Wright in Vegas last Friday night, and he was amazing. He was 80 minutes. It flew by. I give him a lot of credit. Years ago, when Rodney was in his heyday, Seinfeld, Mark Schiff, and I, we went to Vegas. We saw in one weekend, we saw Rodney, Steve Martin, David Brenner, and Freddie Roman, if you know who that is.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, the phenomenal thing I can say about Stephen Wright, like with all his sort of like one-liner stuff. Like Rodney, you know, he had to, you know, do probably an hour. And with the greatest material in the world, you know, after like 20, 30 minutes, you're going, okay, I get it. You're depressed. And I love Rodney. He's amazing. But you just, you know, it was just he couldn't handle doing a longer set. I mean, people hung in there with him because they wanted to have a great time. But maybe I'm looking at it differently as a comic. But I don't think he could handle the time in a weird way, you know, because it's the same kind of loop that you're going in over and over and over again. And then I thought, hey, Stephen Wright, you know, could be the same thing. You have the, but I'll tell you, he 80 minutes flew by. I was like blown away. 80 minutes.
Wow.
And it says an awful lot how great he is to, because, you know, but he takes you in so many different directions.
And you wouldn't guess that. You'd never guess that.
No, I really expected I was going to feel the same thing that about him that I felt about Rodney, you know, that he was like going to peter out and, you know, I'd get into the rhythm and then, you know, I'd get used to it and then, you know, but no, I'll tell you, 80 minutes flew by and I give him a lot of credit.
So, that's great.
Yeah, it's really great. So if I can drop, huh?
Oh, go ahead.
I said if I can drop any more names in the next couple of minutes.
I was going to say, Steve, you need to fix me up with Stephen Wright there, and I need to get him on here.
I don't know.
Richard Lewis.
That's not easy. I've talked to him a couple of times on the phone, and we've emailed a couple of times, but I've got to feel that one out. It's not so simple.
No,
you know?
I know.
I'm teasing.
I'm teasing, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I wish. Listen, if I could, I would. I mean, I don't.
Oh, yeah, appreciate.
I don't know. I don't know how he approaches this stuff. If he's kind of like.
Yeah, there's some are cool. One. I was really surprised with Tom Dreesen. He just loved it. And we had a great time. He's a fantastic.
It was a good conversation.
Fantastic
he's
comedian.
He's really
classy guy.
Very nice guy, and, you know, he's well-meaning, and, you know, he loves young comedy. He loves comedy.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Hey, you worked with, I got to ask you this, you worked with Steve Martin.
Yeah, I did, and Steve Martin's, he's a classy, nice guy, and a remarkably hard worker, and I couldn't say enough nice things about him. You know, it was just every day, you know, I did about, I think, 8 or 9 weeks on Roxanne.
Right.
The movie, and
the movie.
It was a great movie to be a part of. And, you know, he kind of rewrote, like, every day and every night he'd go home after taping all day, and he'd be rewriting the script, trying to make it better and better. And the guy works really hard.
Wow.
So, you know.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I love Steve.
Yeah. And also, you know, I did also, you know, as I emailed him or called him, you know, not him, but I called him, but I spoke to his assistant, and he got me, you know, I kind of like somebody said, hey, there's a role for you, I think, and you should see about the Out-of-Towners. He did like a remake with Goldie Hawn. And,
right, exactly.
You know, I did a couple of days on that, and, you know, that was just from calling him up. It was like really nice. You know, he's a nice guy, really nice.
He remembered you from Roxanne, and he said he thought you'd be good in the Out-of-Towners.
Well, I mean, you know, when you're working with somebody for, you know, 8-9 weeks, I guess it was, and you kind of get pretty friendly. So, you know, eventually you're kind of aware that he's like a major star still. And actually,
right.
I saw him twice stand-up-wise. He was amazing, but... It was like watching the Beatles of comedy. He kind of like, one of the reasons he stopped doing stand-up was he just felt like there was no nuance to it. He would just say anything and they would scream and, you know, but, you know, he obviously did a lot of other creative things and challenges in his life. Yeah, he's very diverse and all his music now and, but... Yeah, he's just a lovely guy, and, you know, you hang out with him. It's more like just hanging out with I can't quite say appear, but yeah, and he might, which is nice. But you're aware that, oh my God, I'm just hanging with Steve Martin here, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's cool. That's cool to
yeah.
know.
I remember when we first had like the script reading, you know, and Daryl Hannah was a star. And
Daryl.
You know, and we were dry. We were, you know, parked. You know, I guess I was like much further away parking spot wise than she was, and she said, "Hey, I'll give you a lift to your car." I was like, oh, I mean, she's like regular nice person, you know.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, you know, and kind of cute too. So
a little bit.
Yeah.
Fantastic. What was Woody Allen like? You worked with him on
I worked with
Radio
him
Days.
About, I worked 9 days on Radio Days, and I like chopped to pieces on
oh.
Radio. It's just okay. I mean, but I am, you know, it's like the weird thing about doing a movie is you know what people could have seen, you know.
Yeah.
So I auditioned for him. I read for him a couple of times, and you know, he was very nice to me. I mean, I said, "Hey, man," I said, "Man, I'm so nervous." He says, "I know these readings can be like terrifying, you know." He was like trying to be very nice and
right.
You know, but I got this role to play Herbie Hansen, a radio comedian,
right?
And they taped it. And they retaped it, and then it didn't fly. And you know, like literally, Mia Farrow, her character is one of the shills for the show, like a hired laugher,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the radio show.
Right.
So you know, then they use that kind of shill thing in another part of the movie. But then he liked me actually. I shot something else they didn't end up using, but if he didn't like me, he wouldn't have tried to figure something else out for me, which was nice. And, yeah, he was a nice guy. I mean, it's kind of weird, you know, what happened afterwards, obviously, in his life. And,
right.
Because you'd see all the kids hanging around the set all the time, all his kids, he and me, his adopted family. And, yes. Yeah, it was very certainly unique. I mean, I had him. I made him laugh.
All right.
Just to make Woody Allen laugh is kind of.
There
pretty,
you go.
Yeah, but the Herbie Hansen character was it was kind of like written so Herbie would bomb, and they had like a big band like the Herbie Hansen show, and like they had like a dozen musicians with HH on the bandstand, and I had the announcer comes out and he goes, I'm going to make up the name of the insurance company, but he goes, like, the Acme Life Insurance Company is proud to present Herbie Hansen. Remember, remember, life is short, but death is forever, and now here's Herbie. You know, so it was like set up to bomb.
Oh,
and
no.
The jokes were really bad, and but, you know, it was a great, really fun experience.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's a great story. Thanks.
Oh, my God.
Thanks for sharing it.
Oh, yeah. And it was a lot of fun. Shot in New York and,
oh,
you know.
New York and Woody Allen and
oh,
craziness
man.
And, yeah.
Great.
Cool.
People are nice. Jeff Daniels was in, was he in that one? I met him. He had done Purple Rose of Cairo, but I think he was in also Radio Days, and I met him, and he couldn't have been any nice. He was a great guy, very grateful. You know, sometimes you meet these actors that have had really good careers, and they're just like, they're happy that they squeaked through and like had a career and doing what they love to do, and
yeah.
You know, and really.
Well, there, yeah. When I talked to Craig Shoemaker,
yeah,
his big comment was, they're just people.
Yeah. No,
you know, y'all are on screen, but you're on TV, you're on this and that, but we're all just people. And we got different paths. And we, you know, some entertain and some don't, but
yeah,
we're all just people when it comes
that's
down
true.
To it. Yeah.
100% he's on the money, you know?
Yeah. And it was very enlightening. He's like, wow, you know, I've idolized all these comedians, and they're just people like me. And
yeah.
I just love talking to them. They all have a different story, and I love your story.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Really fun, you know, really, really fun. So,
great.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to give you a quick I probably shouldn't do this, and we'll probably edit it out. But I'm going to run a line by you because you're so talented a writer, and
okay.
I want your opinion. Here's my little line. I had a weak chin once, but changed dry cleaners.
That's good.
But I'm bumped. No.
That's good. I like it. I like it.
You like that? Okay. I just thought I'd write a little one there for you. So.
You reminded me somehow, I don't know, it's like how jokes tangent into other jokes or trigger another joke, but it reminds me of something I hardly ever did on stage. Again, you know, I don't have a weak chin anymore.
I know.
But this, you know, obviously for back then, the weak chin days. So I said, when I was depressed, my friends would say, "Hey, Steve, why the short face?"
Perfect.
There you go.
I got a. How about a finish the joke audio, Steve? How about the? We'll do a finish the joke audio. You want to do that real quick?
Which one?
Well, I will just do a finish the joke right now. How's that?
Let's try.
Okay, all right, we'll do this. Steve Littleman is most happy when.
Oh man! Right now,
right
here, right now on our stage, boy, I there's a tie.
Yeah, big bet.
When I'm hanging with my son, when I write something that is completely, it feels like a complete funny thought where it's well expressed.
Cool.
I would say those are.
Those are the two.
Yeah, and with my girlfriend, of course. You know, this is like gimmies. You know, hanging with her, having fun, just relaxing, and
It wasn't really finishing a joke, but it was very poignant and very good.
Yeah. I don't know how long an orgasm lasts, but you know, beginning, middle, and end of that is pretty good too, and.
Right.
You know, whatever the moment of bliss afterwards. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. You don't have to. You can edit that part out, but it's okay. So now you know I'm a clean comedian. Is that, you know?
Yeah. Very good.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Oh, you're welcome.
And
thank you. We appreciate it. Great conversation, and we appreciate the story. It's great talking to you.
Oh, man, it was great. Great to connect. Thank you both very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for doing this, Steve. I really appreciate it. You didn't know me from Adam, and you took a chance to talk to me, and I appreciate that. And
I knew you from Bonto, though. I knew you.
That's right.
Yeah, the Bonto. Yeah.
I've introduced a lot of people. That's one thing.
Yeah. I've got connections, dude.
Hey.
Now I've got Steve on my side, yeah.
If you need anything, if you need to, you know, I don't know about Steve and Ray. I can't tell you. I don't know well enough.
Yeah, dude. I was teasing about that, but I'll. Hey, but if you can, dude.
But if you want to, you know, maybe, you know, Mark Schiff would be great. If you want, he has a lot of stories. He's like a regular kind of opener for, you know, their close old friends for Seinfeld and. You know, so if you want to contact me, I'll get you his info, you know.
Thanks, my friend.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
I think you'll love it. He's got a lot of good stories. So.
I really appreciate it. You've been very nice with your time, and I appreciate you doing this. I really
sure. Yeah, I'm going to work out now. I'm committing nationally, but I'm going to work out right now. So.
Okay.
All
we'll
right.
See you back.
I'm going to do that and shower and be ready to leave at 6 o'clock here. So I'll see you guys later. Take care.
All right.
Take care,
thanks again.
Thank you much. Okay, bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was such a fun time with Steve. I hope you all enjoyed, and I know Mark and I did. And I thank Steve for his time and Mark for joining me. The PA team is me, Tag, Ryan Kilpatrick, and Jenny Coe. You can find us on the intertubes at thepapodcast.com, iTunes, and Stitcher. Now have a great day out there.